You pressed play on this podcast with the click of curiosity. It is another dimension, a dimension of mind, a dimension where nothing is sacred and everything is explainable. You're streaming into a land of both inside and outside, of things and ideas. You've just crossed over into the midside.
Welcome to the midside, where on Labor Day, we work. Well, at least I do. And because of that, you're able to get this episode that I did not expect to make. I'm your host, Justin Emblazeski, and today this week I expected to take the first week off. I believe it would be the first week off in the history of this podcast. I had some personal stuff come up, and because of that, I had decided, you know what, this isn't a good week to record an episode. Life's changing. As we saw, you know, Daniel's left the show because, you know, he got married, he had a kid, he had other stuff he wanted to work on. And I had personal stuff come up, so I was like, okay, well, just won't record an episode this week because I had to satisfy stuff for my job in order to have time. And I didn't think I would have time to satisfy that stuff for my job, but because, I don't know, maybe people would say I'm obsessed with work, I was able to get some stuff done early this morning. And because of that, my schedule opened up this afternoon. I got a little bit of time for free. I got a little time free. And I said, you know what? I'm committed to this show. I've done it for a long time. I'm proud of it. It's something I want to keep going. So I'm going to use that time to record an episode for you all. This won't be a normal episode. It won't be a normal episode because of the personal stuff. At the end, we'll get into some more cultural stuff. So some of the riot stuff, some of the COVID stuff. But even the COVID stuff for me is going to be couched in a personal story. Not as personal as I'm going to open up with here. I'm also going to talk about Tenet. I saw the movie Tenet. I can't spend a long time on it because it'll have spoilers in it. But I think there's some interesting stuff in there and some interesting implications about Christopher Nolan as a thinker and as a storyteller. So I'll talk about that a little bit. So this won't be a typical episode. It won't be a typical solo episode. But you know what? I'm going to soldier on and get into it. So let's just get into it. Some people who follow me on Instagram are going to know. They know what I'm going to talk about already. And I appreciate some of the responses I've said on Instagram. I didn't share things on Instagram for... It's weird because Instagram can be very second-handed. It can be very much like, I'm doing this for other people. I did it for myself, the post I made. I'd been thinking about it for the last 2.5 weeks. It was part of my catharsis. It was part of my dealing with what I'm dealing with. And I knew I wanted to deal with it in that way. It was important to me. You know, I guess it's the writer in me, right? It's the writer in me as you create as a way to make things real. And this is something that through this whole situation, I've realized. And I'll get back to that in a second. The idea of who is this important to, right? And when you create something, who is it important to? Well, ultimately, it's important to you as the artist, first and foremost, and that's where it comes from. And if other people derive joy from it, well, then that's good, you know, because then you share values and you know, something you did can be celebrated, and that's good. That's a positive feeling, you know. Psychological reflection is a positive feeling. But again, I didn't make the post for any specific reason, right? I didn't make it. Sorry, that's a bad way of saying it. Suddenly I start recording and my text messages start blowing up. So I had to flip my phone over because I'm pulling a Dr. Drew here. Adam Carolla would be yelling at me right now because I was looking at my phone. But I didn't make it for any specific reason of trying to get attention from people or trying to elicit sympathy from people. That's not how I work. But it was really important to me to use the medium, because you could share up to 10 pictures, to use the medium to create a sort of statement for myself. So basically, this is the first ever episode of the podcast recorded without one of the podcasts. River. Last episode will be the last time you'll ever hear River on the show. So maybe we can get William to pull out drops, pull out a drop, and we can have that drop in there to memorialize her. And I use that word because you're probably wondering what happened. Did you get rid of her? Did you give her up? Did she run away? Here's the story. I moved across the country at the end of January, started a new job at the beginning of February. You all know that. And when we got here, she seemed fine. But River started losing fur. She was, a lot of her legs were pretty thin on the fur. She was missing a big patch on her back. And in March, I brought her to the vet down the street. You know, Petco has these vets in them, these vet services, and they gave her a checkup, and they said, she's stressed out. You need to give her anti-anxiety medicine. She's stressed out because you just moved across the country, and, you know, with everything that's going on with COVID and us locked inside, she's stressed out, and she's barbering. Barbering, which is over-grooming. And they said, you know, this is something we see with a lot of pets nowadays. A lot that's going on. So essentially they said, you know, this is COVID. They're not saying she had COVID, but, you know, this is a result of COVID. This is sort of how they're tracking COVID deaths, right? They were saying what she was going through was a result of COVID, you know, the situation, the context of COVID. It wouldn't have been caused otherwise, right? That's how they're counting a lot of COVID deaths. And I say that very intentionally because when we get to the next part of this story. So I didn't buy her the anti-anxiety meds. Why? Because I think our society is over-medicating. I'm not going to over-medicate a cat. But what I did do was they talked about these pheromone dispensers you can buy. They're like $30 and you buy refills for like $15 a month. And you plug them in and they cover 700 square feet, which is about the size of my apartment. So I got it and I plugged it in. I bought it off Amazon and River started laying by it every day. And she did seem a lot happier and she wasn't barbering. She started growing all her hair back. But then near the end of August, I started to notice that she looked really skinny and her stomach was really bloated. So I was like, well, maybe she's constipated. Maybe there's something going on with that. So about 2.5 weeks ago from when this episode is released, it was a Wednesday, I brought her to the vet. And the vet checked her out and said, you know, we can do a blood test, but I'm pretty sure her liver is failed or failing. So, of course, I had them do the blood test, right? Because you know me, you know the way I approach the world. I'm going to make sure I'm doing what's objectively correct. What's, you know, what there's the most evidence for, especially because of months ago, they told me that they thought she was just barbering. Now I see that barbering, I looked it up. Barbering is a symptom of liver failure, right? If they're dealing with a lot of pain, that's how they deal with it. Sometimes weight loss, which she had, and that was one of the reasons they speculated that her liver was failing, was that, you know, she had lost 3 pounds since March and she was already a tiny cat. And they did the blood tests off the charts. So I had to make a decision. They said, you know, you can medically manage her where she would have weeks to months to live, or you can save her the pain and euthanize her. So I couldn't in the moment process the gravity of the decision to be able to make it. So I brought her home and I watched her for a couple days, and without any pain medication, she was fine. She was still eating. She was still using the litter box. She was still talking to me. She was still doing her daily routines. Everything was normal. And I then was faced with a decision where my highest value in life is life. And I didn't want to take 1 minute away from her of a good life if I didn't have to. So I had an appointment, a euthanasia appointment scheduled for that Saturday. And I didn't want to do it. I said, her life is too good. So I decided to take the day-to-day approach. And I said, I'm just going to take it day by day and see how she does and make an appointment based on that. And, you know, I started to see the signs. Like, there were other signs that she was weak before then. And, you know, I started to see them more and more. And gradually she did get weaker. But what eventually happened was, you know, this is Labor Day weekend. I didn't really want to do it alone. The thought of doing it alone was tough for me. And what I mean by it being there and ending her life, because now having been through it, I understand how beautiful what I did was. But thinking about it beforehand, thinking about I'm going to decide when this being's life ends, and I'm going to do it by myself and no one else is going to share that experience, was crazy to me. It was so intense. It was so insane. So what I did was I bought my fiance a plane ticket. I used all y'all Patreon money, supporters. No, I took it out of my own savings account. And but if you want to support us on Patreon, you can do so at patreon.com/themidside. Or you can also support us on Locals, locals.com/themidside. Patreon is per episode. Locals is per month. Look at how slickly I slided into that plug. So I bought her a plane ticket, and I said, this is what I'll do. I will give River as much love as I can, you know, because I have to work and everything, and spend as much time with her as I can over the next 2 weeks. And when you're here, when you fly in that Friday, we'll go to the vet and have her put to sleep. And that's what we did on Friday. So this is Monday, Sunday, Saturday. So what, 3 days ago? 3 days without River. 3 days without River. And that's why I thought I wasn't going to record an episode this week, because I needed to take the weekend. Honestly, even the stuff I have outlined here, it doesn't matter as much to me right now, because, you know, it's hard to explain. Like, I found River, like, when I could hold her in the palm of my hand. That's how small she was. She came out of the bushes and yelled at me, and then Echo followed her, and, you know, everywhere I moved since, you know, all the places in California, and then moving back across the country. So I moved across the country twice with her. And she was with me everywhere. I mean, even here in Florida, we had to live in like a Motel 6, a studio Motel 6 for a week. And she was with me through it all. And I always pictured owning a house here in a couple of years and the cats moving in, and that would be their final resting place. So it just happened so suddenly, and it's so crazy. And I thought I was going to need the weekend. And I'm still processing it. I'm going to be processing it for a long time, but I can tell you right away sort of my major takeaways. My first thing is I'm really, really glad I was there. Because when they did put, well, first of all, they brought us in a room and they said, you can have as much time with her when you want. We're going to electronically send you the consent documents. Once you sign the consent documents electronically, we'll know you're ready and we'll come in here. So I did that and took the time. And then honestly, for the first time, right before I signed the consent documents, what the decision that made me sign the consent documents was I looked at her, and for the first time, she looked ready. And it made me realize over the past 2 weeks, she knew. And I'm not ascribing some sort of higher cognition to animals, like the metacognition that humans have. But she was very loving over the past 2 weeks, spending as much time with me as possible. And then when I saw her in the room, I knew she was ready. And then, you know, they put a catheter in her so the doctor could inject two types of anesthetic. One, just put her in a light sleep so she could still, you know, hear me. And then another was, it was, you know, numb her and then eventually stop her heart. And it was tough. I mean, I'm not going to lie. It's not easy. But knowing that I was there and, like, when the first antiseptic was injected into the catheter, she was looking directly at me. We were making direct eye contact, and I was talking to her, and she loved when I said her name. I mean, you heard on the podcast, if I would say her name, she would talk back to me, and her tail would always wag, and that's what I did. I just kept talking to her, and knowing that the bond we had and how important I was to her, knowing that I could give her that and be there in the room, and knowing that that's what her final moments were like, and it, you know, it gave her a peaceful death rather than, you know, dying and suffering in agony, is I think that's the final thing I could have done for her. And it's really tough, right? It's really, really tough to think that that's a good thing you did and to deal with that in the moment, because you're also mourning a loss and you're giving up something you love, right? This would be colloquial what people would call a sacrifice, right? This goes back to the whole Batman versus Superman thing, where Superman is doing the inverse of this, right? So what I did was I had to decide to, and I'm going to say this very bluntly, I had to decide to kill someone I love to save her. I had to decide to kill River to save her. Well, Superman did the opposite. He had to die in order to save who he loved. Now, people would say that's a sacrifice, but when your highest value is not seeing what you value and who you value suffering, then you make these tough choices. And now it sounds like I fucking call myself heroic. I'm not saying that. But what I'm saying is, now that I went through it, I can't picture not having done it. Not that I think it would ever make it easier, but it shows me that I made the choice that I had to make. And what I am saying is, in the same way that Superman in that movie gained his self-esteem to make that decision at the end of the movie, I think the choice I made could only have been made if I had developed the self-esteem I had at this point. And I say that as coming from someone who has historically in my life had low self-esteem and struggled with that. And I still struggle with it. But a moment like this, it really helped me. And the way I know it helped me is the other lesson I learned from this. I mean, I was even looking at afterwards, Echo, this is her sister, right? The only being in the entire world who has known River longer, who knew River longer than I did, was Echo. So afterwards, I was looking at Echo because I wanted it to matter to her. Because part of me was like, if it matters to her, that shows that I'm not crazy. But then I realized, and I realized especially with, I didn't get very many responses to the Instagram post. The responses I got were wonderful, and thank you to anyone who responded to me, but I didn't get a lot. And through that, and through Echo, you know, dealing in her own way, and I'm starting to see her dealing more and it hitting her more. But in the beginning, you know, when we didn't come home with River and Echo was just alone, I thought she would wonder where River was more. I thought it more fucked. And when it didn't, and I just had this thing, I just had this feeling of, I want this to be important. But then very quickly I realized it is important because it's important to me. And I can't say I've ever quite had that experience before. And I think I had it this time because literally, like I said, no one in the world had the relationship I had with River. No one. No one. Even Echo, who knew River longer than I did, can't have the same relationship because she's not a person and not a caretaker. Now, she had a unique relationship with River that I can't ever replicate. But I would never say it's the level of depth I had with River. And it just, I would say my self-esteem grew immensely through this situation. That's what I would say. And that's crazy to me. That's crazy to me to say, but I there are just some moments in life that you look back and they do that for you. And that's what this was for me. So I would say that's the positive to take away from this. So don't feel bad for me. I appreciate it if you have a moment of human empathy or sympathy or whatever fucking term we're using nowadays, right? But I think that this really helped me grow as a person. I feel stronger because of it. And it helps. It helps with the morning, right? Because I think River gave me a lot of value. You know, I protected her. I brought her a great life. I brought her many different places to live. We had crazy adventures, right? Think of all the places we lived. Think of all the people we lived with. And she would have never had that. She would have just been living in the bushes. She would have been a feral cat living in the bushes in South Carolina. So I think I provided her a lot of value, a lot of love. And she did the same for me. And to think the way she changed my life, like, I don't know. It's weird. I don't know how people get other cats. You know, people have already said that. They're like, well, you can get another cat. I don't know. Maybe it's like when you break up with someone, you're like, well, how could I have another relationship? Maybe I'm just in that phase, but I don't know. It's weird. But anyway, let's move on. You guys have heard me wax philosophical about, you know, my cat dying more than you probably expected. So hold on a second. I'm just going to respond to a text. Sorry about that. So the second thing on my outline, let me get to my outline here. The second thing, I saw Tenet. That's the second thing. So, you know, last episode, you all heard me say I went back to the theaters, New Mutants, the trick about the food, right? AMC, I love. I just, you know, spend an extra, I'll pay a $5 tax, right? If I go see four movies for $20 a month, I don't have to wear a mask in a movie theater. I'll do that. If you want to monetize me not wearing a mask, I'll do that. I never even finished the $5 bag of popcorn. I saw an hour and a half movie last night. I saw Unhinged. Don't go see it. But I saw Unhinged, and I didn't even finish the $5 popcorn. But you know what? I didn't have to wear a mask the whole time. And if they came in, I would be able to quickly enough grab some popcorn to make it look like I was eating it the whole time. And I ate it a lot, but, you know, you naturally slow down. Because one, popcorn is like pancakes, like Mitch Hedberg used to say. It's great in the beginning, but awful at the end. And then also, it starts getting stuck in your teeth, and it weighs your stomach down, right? Although I do understand now, because during Tenet, I got a large soda. I didn't think I would drink the whole thing, and I thought if I did, I would have to go to the bathroom. I didn't. I sat through the whole movie, drank the whole soda, and I didn't have to go to the bathroom. And now I understand why they sell the soda and the popcorn together, because it did make it easier to eat the popcorn drinking the soda. So I understand that. So the movie itself. Let's talk about the movie itself. I don't want to spoil too much because I would encourage you to see this movie. And I intend on seeing it again, which is not totally unexpected, but also says a lot about the movie, right? But it's a Christopher Nolan movie, so that's pretty much, you know, you might have expected that from me, right? Basically, the movie is about inversion of time, right? You can reverse entropy, which means objects and people can move backwards through time. So if you can reverse their entropy, you can make them move backwards in time. This obviously creates dealing with things like predestination paradoxes, right? Which they address within the movie. They talk about them, right? And they have the line, you know, what happens happened, right? That's a big line in the movie. So basically you have this idea of two time, you know, one time stream going in opposite ways. I mean, that's the title of the movie, Tenet. And the title of the movie, you know, asks the question, you know, what is the Tenet, right? And this is what I would say the Tenet is. I would say this is basically an argument for compatibilism. I would say the Tenet is compatibilism. Now, again, I'd have to see this again. I have to refine this. But it seems to me the point of the movie is that even if everything is predetermined, you are still responsible for your decisions and you still have free will. So the idea that free will can exist even if there is determinism. Determinism being everything is determined ahead of time. In philosophy, that's the idea of compatibilism. Compatibilism is saying moral responsibility is compatible with determinism. I personally don't hold that view. I think if everything's determined, you're not morally responsible. Even if you then go, oh, well, I'm going to rationalize that, you know, even if, or if you say, well, I can do whatever I want. I'm going to start killing people. Well, yeah, that's inevitably the only way that your psychology could have manifested in the deterministic universe. Therefore, you are still not morally responsible. But this goes back to Inception, right? We can see how Inception leads up to this compatibilism of Christopher Nolan. Because Inception has the ultimate idea of, it doesn't matter if you can know the universe is true or not, you have to act as if it is. Well, that leads directly into compatibilism. Because you can never really know as a human if determinism is true or not, so then you have to act as if it's not. So we see how this is very, very, very synergistic with his earlier movies. We see how it works with his earlier movies. And there's a key scene at the end of the movie, which, again, I would have to see again, because if you've seen a lot of people online are saying it can be hard to hear things. Yeah, that's certainly true. It can be hard to hear things, especially in the battle at the end of the movie. You know, there's a gigantic action set piece at the end of the movie. But there's a key scene between Robert Pattinson and John David Washington at the end. Very, very key scene, which deals with the whole idea of Tenet, the palindrome, and things running backwards and forwards. Very, very key scene. So I'd have to see that again. And then I'd actually love to watch that scene again and then watch the entire movie again. Because here, this was my experience with the movie. And I think this is intentional on Nolan's part. Because, you know, with the whole determinism thing, the people who are in the movie are the ones who have to be in the movie. And especially with the Robert Pattinson character and, you know, that final scene, I think this lines up with it. My experience with the first half of this movie is I was fucking confused. I was confused because I would say there were no character introductions. It was just they started interacting, they started talking, and they had these conflicts going on. And I'm like, who are these people? Why do I care about any of this? None of this matters to me. But then I would say all the exposition is at the end of the movie. The heavily expository scenes are at the end of the movie. And that's what I'm talking about, the scene with Robert Pattinson and John David Washington. I would say that is the key expositional scene of the movie, but it's at the end. And the same thing with the other two major characters. I don't remember the actors' names. I think one's Kenneth Branagh. I'm not sure, though, so don't quote me on that. That other scene between, you know, the villain and his wife, who's sort of a... The villain's sort of almost like Gail Winan in Fountainhead. It's very strange. And she's almost like Dominique. It's very weird in that way, which I think if, you know, hardcore objectivists will appreciate the movie for that way. But throughout the movie, even at the beginning, I was like, wow, because she's even into art. The female lead of the movie is into art. And I was like, wow, is she Dominique? And the way she looks, too, right? The casting. I was almost like, wow, this is very Randian in the way she looks. Not how I prefer a woman aesthetically, but you could see how a lot of, you know, lithe, very thin, a lot of, you know, objectivists or Ayn Rand may have preferred that type of woman. But yeah, I mean, they're key scenes at the end of the movie as well, all their exposition. And I think that's very intentional on Nolan's part. I'd also love to see if fans would super cut the movie and do, you know, what if you played the scenes, not the actual scenes backwards, but you put the scenes in reverse order? I wonder how that would work. So it's a very rich movie. There's a lot in it. Obviously, it's a Christopher Nolan movie. I think it's worth watching again. I enjoyed it. And this is a perfect example of a movie that I don't agree with philosophically, but I enjoyed tremendously and doesn't make me sick to my stomach. So it shows that you can enjoy things that are well done, even if you don't agree with them. And they have a certain perspective. And I think that's the best way to sum up Christopher Nolan. It's why I'm not like... It's why I don't love him the same way I love Zack Snyder movies, where, you know, Zack Snyder movies have my sense of life. They have my view of the world. Whereas Christopher Nolan, they just don't. You know, in that same sense, I wouldn't put this on the level of the Prestige or The Dark Knight or Interstellar, right? Those are probably, you know, my favorite Nolan movies. Inception's probably a little below those, but, you know, Inception has the same problem of this. So I would say this movie is probably most similar to Inception. I don't think it'll do well as well publicly for two reasons. One, it just when it's released, it didn't make a lot of money. And there weren't a lot of people in the theaters when I saw it. So when it was released, there's a lot of, you know, controversy around that. There's going to be a lot of baggage around that. And then two, this is a lot headier than Inception. Inception's headiness was, you know, they had the scenes explaining all the dreams and the dream crafting and all of that and the levels. So there was headiness there, but this movie is very, very heady, and I don't think it'll do as well in the public's perception because of that. But then that means also with this movie, you're going to have a lot of people who want to seem smart who are going to fetishize this movie and say it's no one's best. This will probably be the movie that people point to say it's his best. Although I have seen a couple people starting to point to The Prestige, which makes me feel like a jackass, because that's, you know, if you heard my Nolan notes, I think that's his best movie. That's my favorite by him. So I think it's worth checking out. I'll check it out again. I probably won't see it in theaters again. I don't know the next time I'm going to go to a theater. I know there's other stuff coming out that I'm going to want to see, but I don't remember when that is. So, you know, we'll see. All right, another quick break here. Hold on. Sorry, like I said, immediately when I started recording, then my text messages blew up. It's insane. Nobody ever talks to me, and then all of a sudden I'm trying to talk about my dead cat on a podcast, and everyone wants to talk to me. It's crazy. So, the third thing to talk about here is this, a couple stories I saw posted in the Discord. If you ever want to, you know, join the Discord, keep the conversation going during the week, you can join us. Just go to midside.com/podcast, click on any episode link, and you can see, you know, the link that says join Discord. You can get in there. I asked earlier today, I said, hey, I'm going to do a solo episode. What do you want to hear me talk about? And Midsider Morgan in the chat said whatever your pronoun is, posted an article and wanted to hear me talk about it. And it's a response to the Antifa war camp thing. So there was an article that came out where they, you know, somebody said that these camp cities, right, these tent cities, you know, back to Theodore Roosevelt back in the day, these tent cities, I know that's not the exact name Teddy Roosevelt used, but these tent cities in Portland, someone claimed, is where there's a Gateway Pundit article somebody put in the Discord. Oh, William put it in the Discord. Okay. There's a tent city where this Gateway Pundit article is claiming Antifa in Portland is organizing. That's where they're staying and organizing. And a big piece of evidence they have is they have a picture of this guy called Trumpet Man, who's been arrested as Antifa and released. They have a picture of him in the tent city. And they're basically saying, hey, this is where Antifa's doing all their planning and setting up and so on and so forth. Then there's a response, and this is what Midsider Morgan shared. Oh, no, sorry. I'm losing my mind. Scrolling up here. I apologize. Midsider Morgan asked if we were taking a week off, but Midsider Ed Joe posted the reply. I love that name, Ed Joe. Sounds like you're living in the South. I love it. So Midsider Ed Joe asked me to follow up from the other side on that Antifa camp article from the other day. So I'm just pissing off all my listeners now. I've misgendered Morgan. I've given credit to the wrong person, so I apologize, Ed Joe. But Ed Joe posted this article from the OregonLive.com that says a video claimed to show an Antifa war camp in Portland. It's actually a shelter for homeless people during the COVID-19 pandemic. And it's a very short article that basically says there we have proof that this camp was set up and is being used to house homeless people during the COVID-19 pandemic. So first of all, I just want to say, hey, we want to keep everyone socially distanced, so let's put a bunch of homeless people in the same area. That'll contain the disease. That's not smart. I know they'll say, oh, we have the tent 6 feet apart. We're not responsible for what they do. If you're going to try and socially engineer society, then you should be able to anticipate that if you put homeless people near each other, especially if a lot of them have psychological conditions or they're drug addicts, that they're not going to stay 6 feet apart in their tents. Just saying. But the basic argument from the Oregon Live article is that's what it was set up for, so it's not Antifa. Couldn't Antifa also be squatting there? Couldn't both purposes be true at the same time? Because here's the thing that needs to be acknowledged. These Antifa people in Portland, they don't hold normal jobs. Maybe some of them do. Maybe there's a rotating cast of characters that comes in every couple days like, oh, it's Wednesday, it's my Antifa day. Maybe it's something like that. Oh, it's Friday. What are you doing tonight? Oh, I'm gonna be Antifa tonight. Oh, I'm gonna be part of the riots tonight. Oh, it's Saturday. What are you gonna do? I'm gonna set a fellow protester on fire with a Molotov cocktail tonight. Maybe there are some people like that. But most of these people are not people with real jobs, real homes. If you look at them, you look at the way they're acting, they have to have a place they're staying. So it makes sense they would stay in these camps. And I think William said it the best in the chat. Let me read what he said here in Discord. He said, that's interesting, but a strange counter to the story. The guy said they used the area for staging and claimed to identify one of the violent leaders staying at the camp. The article above, quote-unquote, fact checks a straw man about it being set up for the purpose of Antifa. It illustrates the two separate universes the media lives in today. Yeah, and it's not just the two separate universes. It's how everyone talks past each other. I read the original article. I don't think they said it was set up for Antifa. And if they did, they're all missing the point. Both of them are missing the point. Everything going on right now is not about like what's directly being said in the public or anything. Again, this, like I said at the top, like it's hard for me to get interested in this stuff right now. Like, so people on the right and people on the left said dumb shit about a tent city in Portland. Antifa's attacking people in Portland. We know this. These are all facts of reality that are immutable at this point. People on the right are going to say dumb shit. People on the left are going to say dumb shit. And Antifa's going to keep committing violence in Portland. Update me when something changes. Update me when something changes. I don't care right now. Update me when something changes. So the final thing, talking about something changes. So I had a COVID experience at the gym. So since I moved here, I've been trying to find a gym. I upgraded to Planet Fitness Super Sport 24-hour Fitness Super Sport, because that was the only 20, I had 24 in California. That was the only 24 around here was a Super Sport. That was like $45 a month. And then something happened with my paycheck, so I was getting paid less than I expected. So I canceled that. So then I found out I had a perk as a teacher where I could get no enrollment, no yearly fee to Planet Fitness. All right, like $20 a month. Or I could even do 10 if I only wanted to go to one club. But I was like $20 a month would be their highest level. Now, they don't have free barbells. They only have Smith machines. The highest their dumbbells go are 60 pounds. So I was kind of like, you know, not enthused about it to begin with. Then at the beginning of August, they said that you have to wear a mask even when you're working out. So I immediately tweeted at them and submitted a form that said, I'm not going to work out while wearing a mask. I'd like to freeze my membership. I did that. And then 3 days later, they must have had such a backlash that they undid that rule. And they said, you can wear a mask or you cannot wear a mask as long as you're actively working out. So if you walk in and out of the club or you're in the locker room, you have to wear a mask. Okay, fine. You want me to, that's my compromise. You want me to, that's what you need me to do to pretend that I give a shit about this mask thing? Okay. So I started doing that. Then I had an incident at the gym. I'm going to tell you it caused me to walk out and immediately cancel my membership. So I was on the bicep curl machine, finished up, cleaned it, you know, and the less than 5 feet away, maybe 5 feet away was the cleaning solution. Cleaned it, Then I moved to the tricep machine, which is, you know, 3 to 5 feet to the left of the bicep machine. Now, granted, these machines are right next to the front desk, but I got on the tricep machine. I was about to start lifting, and a guy came over to me. I assume he was the manager, and he said to me, excuse me, and I said, yes. And he said, just to let you know, you have to wear a mask when you're not actively working out. And I just looked at him for a second because I couldn't process what he said, because I am actively working out, right? I'm sweating, I'm breathing heavier, I'm in between, you know, I'm changing machines, you know, I'm in between exercises here. So it took me a second, then I looked at him, I said, so when I walk between machines, I have to put a mask on? And he said, yes. Without even hesitating, I just said, I picked up my towel and I said, okay, picked up my towel, picked up my keys, picked up my water bottle. And I said, okay, well, I'm going to cancel my membership. And I started walking out. And he says to me, well, we can do that right now. And I said, okay. He brings me to the front desk, does all the stuff. I sign it, sign the, you know, the form. It was a, you know, the digital form. You sign the pad. And I said, have a nice day. Good luck. And I walked out. And I will never in my life give Planet Fitness my business again. As if somehow me walking within a 5 foot, at most 10 foot radius with no one around me is going to expose other people to COVID, to coronavirus, COVID-19. Especially when you look at people who are physically fit are less likely to get sick. And if they do get sick, they're less likely to get hospitalized. You know, we've been through this rabbit hole again of it's diminishing returns on statistics all the way down, right? Especially because I'm less likely to get it. Especially because I'm around kids all day in school. So if I was going to get it, I would have it. Look at all the places I've been. How have I not had it yet? It was completely irrational. And I'm never going to go there again. And I've told some people the story. Like I talked to Dan about it and he said, this is somebody who just wanted to exercise power over you. And that's crazy to me. That's crazy because it's like, that's how you want, like, that's what's important to you. That's what's important to you. So fortunately, this is how all this culminates and works out in my favor, right? 24-hour business went out of business. 24-hour fitness went out of business. Well, that was tough to say. 24-hour fitness went out of business. That was tough to enunciate. You know, I had known that. I saw that the club I used to work out at Garden Walk in Anaheim was gone. And I said to myself, well, it's glad I left California because I wouldn't have had a gym. Of course, now I'm here and I was displaced from a gym, right? And I say I was displaced because I woke up on Saturday morning and I checked my email on my phone and I have that UPS informed delivery digest, which is just like, hey, USPS, the UPS informed delivery digest, which is basically like, hey, we're going to prove we're a value to society by taking pictures of all the junk mail you receive every day and sending you an email with it. So now I check my mail less because what do I need to check my mail for? I know it's junk mail every day. But that morning, I got a junk mail flyer from Crunch Fitness saying, if you can be one of the first 500 members of our new gym, then you can, you know, get this good rate. You know, you can have, if you're only involved with this gym, you can get $10 a month. And if you want every Crunch Fitness, you can be $25. And this is a lifetime fee. And I was like, what? So I called them, I found out, and I immediately drove over there. And as I'm driving over there and I'm getting closer, I knew the area it was in. They had bought the building that the 24-hour fitness I was going to was in. They had bought it, and they were renovating it. You know, they're taking out the basketball court, doing other things to give it more space. And I was like, wow, so I'm going to get to go to the same gym for, you know, $20 less a month. $20 less a month, so $25 rather than $45. That's great. And then, you know, before I did that, I also asked them, you know, I asked them what kind of equipment they had. You know, they have the free barbells, their dumbbells go over, you know, they go up to like 120 or something like that. Not that I've ever gotten up to 120, but there was some stuff I was using 80, 85 for. I would like to be potentially billed above that, right? You know, the coronavirus pandemic has hurt a lot of us who had to stay home. We were used to lifting. I'm set back a little bit, but there are, you know, there are some some exercises that I would like to move beyond the 60 pounds, and that was holding me back, that I was just doing more reps, you know, rather than lifting heavier weights. At a certain point, you want to stop doing more reps and you want to start doing heavier weight. So I can do that again, which is nice, and start building up again. I'm looking forward to that when the gym finished refurbishing and opens. But I talked to them about that. And the other thing I talked to them about was the mask. And I said, what's your mask policy? And I told them the Planet Fitness story. And they said, no, once you get in the gym and you're actively working and you're working out and you're walking around the gym, you don't have to put a mask on. As long as you are working out. You know, when you walk in and out, you have to wear a mask. But when you're actually working out, you have to wear, or you don't have to wear a mask. And I was like, done, sold. You will have my business for life. I will go to this gym for life because you have that policy. Because, like, even the policy of actively working out, right? Planet Fitness never defined what that meant. You think if they go to a court of law and I take them to a court of law and I say actively working out includes the breathing in between sets and the heart rate in between sets, as long as your heart rate is elevated and you're sweating, you're actively working out. I guess you could add in like the intention of working out, right? Because sometimes your heart rate's raised and you're breathing heavy and you don't intend to be working out. So I guess you can add intent in there, which of course, then you add intent in there and that becomes a different, difficult argument, right? You're telling me there's not a good enough lawyer to get around actively working out that you can harass me about walking 3 to 5 feet to the left to wear a mask? Come on. All of this is the biggest nonsense, virtue signaling, outwardly facing stuff ever. And everyone is only, I'm going to tell you, I don't know what it's like anywhere else, but here in Florida, everyone is only going along with this because they think it's going to be over soon. They don't think it's going to happen eventually. They don't think it's going to stick around. They think it's going to end eventually. So, all right, that's all I got this week. You know, as always, as I said, you can support us on Patreon, patreon.com/themidside. You can support us on Locals, themidside.com/locals, or you can do themidside.com/Patreon. You can do patreon.com/themidside too. But our Locals link is like themidside.locals.com. It just gets confusing. I need to just say themidside.com/Patreon and then themidside.com/locals. That's what I need to say. I need to stick to that. I need to also thank our Liberty.me listeners. Appreciate you, libertarians. Got a lot in common with you, although I will say I do not believe there's a such concept as left libertarianism. That's something I'm seeing on Twitter all the time now, and you cannot be a libertarian if you also believe in socialism or government regulation involvement in the economy. That is an oxymoron. You are not a libertarian. You are just not as hardcore of a leftist as other leftists are. As always, if you want to, you know, help grow the show, you can tell a friend. That's the most important way to keep the show going. And I appreciate if you listen to this whole episode, and I appreciate if you listen to me talk about my cats. I'm going to miss River. I'm going to miss hearing her on the show. Maybe William can get that drop. We'll see what happens from now on, but life's different now. But you know what? The beautiful thing about life is it goes on. This concludes your journey into the midside. I'm Justin M. Lesneski reminding you that if things get tough, take a step back and witness the farce.